Welcome to Muffin Talk. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the Catholic Church. Today, I've invited Brother Kieran Finn to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Brother Kieran, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Kia ora, Beate.
Brother Kieran Finn is a Champagne brother and Bible scholar. He is originally from Gisborne and has spent many years in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad. Titiponamu is currently running a series with Brother Kieran about the women in the Bible. Brother Kieran, we've gone through quite a few women in the Bible already, and now we are going to approach the book of Judith. And sometimes it's not so well known, but it's quite a significant book. Does the book of Judith connect to any of the other women we've talked about?
Well, I think it's quite amazing when you start thinking about contrasts and comparisons. Say, for instance, like we've just finished Esther and Ruth, for instance. And here in the book of Judith, there's no figure of an uncle like Mordecai or some newly discovered male relative like Boaz and Ruth to guide the action or to rescue by marriage. So Judith alone is the heroine, the one who saves through her piety, her initiative, and her courage. And I would like to add, her beauty, her wit, and her strength. So that's good. You know, that's the ones that we've had recently. But then again, there are other sort of aspects that come through quite strongly when we look at something like back in earlier, Miriam and Deborah Jael. Real power belongs not only to the men of the nation, it's a special gift to the women of Israel. Miriam, a daughter of the Hebrews, is first to proclaim this understanding of the Exodus event. Horse and chariot the Lord has cast into the sea. But Judith has got prayer and a song of praise that they're modeled on the song of Miriam. And in Judges, Deborah is the real channel of God's power, which defeats Sisera. Now, the Lord has Sisera fall into the power of a woman, Jael, who pierces his head.
Well, that was quite a gruesome story.
Judith takes the head, right? But yes, in Deborah's song, Jael is praised as Judith will be at the end, blessed among women. So Judith stands as a companion to the other women of God who look not to themselves for power and strength, but who place their trust completely in God. Like she's not into the, God, you've got 5 days to make it rain. He doesn't buy into that. She wants complete victory, not just survival.
So she's very active.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. They are women who are strong enough to allow God to be free and wait for God's good time. Women who cannot be defeated by despair. This is the model, the strong and faithful woman of God. And then, of course, we've just looked at Esther. And like this book is structured in a similar sort of a pattern, 3 basic steps. The mood of mounting suspense in the opening chapters. Israel is pushed to the brink of defeat. Well, in Esther, they're pushed to the brink of annihilation. As all hope vanishes, they are delivered through the courage, the steadfast loyalty, the hesed of a woman, whether it's Esther or Judith. And this astonishing victory gives rise to great moments of celebration and thanksgiving. In the book of Judith, Purim, But it's not really fair to reduce Judith to a mere variation of Esther.
So Purim is Esther, not Judith, right?
Esther, yes, that's right. There's no sort of partying after the book of Judith, except the celebration of the leaders and of the Jewish people. So, yeah, they are really two original storytellers that are at work in each of those books, separated by a couple of centuries.
Can you tell just a little bit about the background, the story of Judith, so that people who are listening to it and who haven't read it for a long time, so just to give a little bit of a short overview.
Well, it really starts with the first bit, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, is turned into being king of Assyria. He's king of the Babylonians. And then he wages war on the whole earth because some part of the world didn't support him. He wins victory after victory, and then he comes to this small, isolated town of Bethulia, which is really close to Jerusalem. Now, the time setting of 587 was the time of the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem and of its temple. Now, the deliverance, if Bethulia wins through the hand of a woman by defeating Holofernes, the general of Nebuchadnezzar, there's a soldier who comes to find their leader in order to attack and finds him headless. And what he says is that the house of Nebuchadnezzar has been shamed by a Hebrew woman. Now, they are leaderless, dare I say, headless,
yes. Right?
Because for seven chapters, we have had the men of Bethulia making all the decisions, sort of setting up the defense and so on. And all that happens is that their water supply is cut off.
Mm-hmm.
So they tell God, who has already told them. God, in chapter 4 of the book, see, the first seven chapters are the men.
Yeah.
And then the last eight chapters are Judith's story. But the men, well, they've been told by God. They pray to God, and the Lord heard them, and the Lord looked kindly on their distress. So God is on their side. The only trouble is they then start putting limits on God of 5 days to make it rain. And of course, when Judith turns up in chapter 8, she is not happy. This is really a story of interesting contrasts and panels and so on. But she then is not out for survival. She's out for victory. So she goes out then with her maid, and she's got they take a bag because she's got their food. And see, each night when she's in the camp, like good Jewess, and her name means Jewess, Judith.
Yes.
She goes out to eat her food and bathe. Nice ritual Jewish practices.
Yes.
So the camp becomes used to it. And the camp, when she turns up with her maid, they admire the beauty. What a people it is to have such a beautiful woman. This widow is wealthy, intelligent, prayerful.
And beautiful.
Now, yes, but the language, when she's talking in the camp, watch the language, because she's got such wit and intelligence. I can refuse my Lord nothing. Oh, it's double-edged. Of course
which
she can
Lord?
Refuse
which
as
Lord?
A good Jew. Yes, Lord, that's it. And of course, reminds me, what was it now, somewhere where... Me, it's me. Oh, yes, it was in the book of Esther, where Haman thinks, the king wants to honor me, and it's not him, it's his enemy, Mordecai. yes, the same mistake. And, of course, Holofernes thinks that she is completely and acceding to his wishes. So then there's a few establishing this sort of relationship and so on, and flattering him and really speaking of the Lord.
Yes.
And the time comes when he thinks he's going to have her for his bed. And he's so enjoying this thought that he gets himself nice and drunk. And that's when, of course, her beauty and her wit and finally her strength, that strong right arm comes in, and she takes his head off. Now, where back in the past have we heard the story of someone insignificant and weak killing a great and powerful figure?
David and Goliath.
David. Exactly. You kind of see that not only are there women who are figures that come through in this comparison, there are some male figures that come through too. Quite interesting patterns. I mean, couldn't we compare now? That's sort of the outline of the story. She brings back the head. Where in the food pack that they're used to seeing her carry, that food bag, and her maid comes in with her. Now, the maid is important in the story. We mustn't miss her significance. But she's with Judith all the way. And they bring the head back. And, of course, there is another interesting figure of Borghese was the assistant to the general, but the army had been warned. They had captured this character who was from the Ammonites, and he told them, "You must make sure that this people has sinned against his God, because if you try and take this, you're going to fail." And because of that, they were so angry with him that they dumped him outside the Jewish encampment, and they had to look after him from then on. He was the one who fainted at the sight of the head of Holofernes, but he joined the Jewish people after that. So, yes, it's a very interesting story. But we were looking at the comparisons with male figures as well as female figures. We've got David and Goliath. But what about Moses? Moses delivered his people in days gone by from Pharaoh through the hand of Moses. Now the people are rescued from an equally invincible foreign ruler through the hand of a woman. See, Holofernes is the embodiment of foreign arrogance and might. He's not only killed, but he's killed by the hand of a woman, forced to endure the ultimate disgrace. Remember back in the book of Judges, Abimelech, and that big millstone dropped down on his head.
And he wanted to be killed.
His servant to kill him.
Yes.
Because nobody was. Well, he's in the Bible as being killed by the hand of a woman, right? So, yes, Holofernes. Yes, and then the David and Goliath comparison. So, yes, I think that's probably the male comparison to make.
The only other time that I remember about somebody being beheaded in the Bible is when it comes to Salome and John the Baptist.
Oh, yes, yes.
But of course, and it was also a very insignificant young woman who caused it, but really the wish was from her mother.
It's kind of like an anti-type.
Exactly, an anti-type. Exactly.
Yes,
Judith is also sometimes, we're talking about anti-types, called a book of contrasts. Why is it a book of contrasts?
Oh, yes. Well, probably because of the difference between the chapters. Like, we have 7 chapters of masculine military force led by Nebuchadnezzar's servant, General Holofernes, to dominate the Israelites, that last little area that is holding out against the power. Look, if they had dominated and taken Bethulia, and gone on to take Jerusalem, they would have destroyed Judaism. Now, what's going on here is that in the days of the Maccabees, you have Antiochus Epiphanes trying to turn the whole of the world into Greek culture. And that's in the second century. This book itself is sort of situated way back, but it's written probably in the middle of the second century, around about 150 or so. So it's really an encouragement, a bit like Esther, how Esther encourages people living in diaspora to hold on to their faith. Judith is a book that encourages people not to take up the Greek culture, the Greek gods, but to remain within their Jewish identity. So, yes, but we've got this, these seven chapters. Now, in these seven chapters, we have these seven chapters followed by nine chapters in which we meet Judith. And she's very critical of what those has been achieved by the men in those first seven chapters. Somebody once described the book as a satire on godless male capacity. Emphasis on godless, right? Right? So, yes, the survival of the first chapters gives way to the victory of the last nine chapters. So, yes, Judith has got feminine charm and subtlety, and she's the model of an observant Judean woman. And her triumph is a triumph over the male world. Powerful, armed, forceful, right? So the link between the two parts is that man, Achior, whose name I was trying to remember before. Achior was the one who gives the theology of the book of Judges, that when Israel is at peace with its God, then it is invincible.
Right? It's invincible, yes.
So, yes. Yes. The Gentiles were warned. Yes, they were warned. The generals were warned of their folly if they attacked the Jewish people and they were in favor with their God. So, the second part is Judith working with the power of God. So, the action takes place in a dream world, really, because we get the signal in the first verse that, you know, this whole mixing up of Syrian, Babylonian, Nebuchadnezzar, and so on, it's a signal. This is a story, right? It's a story that has moral meaning, message, and encouragement, right? Hold fast, because God will eventually bring us through the help of those who are open to his power.
Brother Kieran, so in the book of Judith, do you have God really featuring? Because in the book of Esther, we heard that God wasn't really mentioned.
Oh, people pray.
Yeah.
We have people, yes, there are prayers there.
In one of the versions.
And no, there's several, because you've got the men praying in the beginning and you've got Judith praying.
So in the book of Judith, it's a prayer.
He then carries out.
Yeah. So it's a prayer.
The prayer is there and strong. Yes. But see, like the verse I read before, God heard the prayers of the men.
Yes.
And then, of course, Judith's own prayer was beautiful. Right.
And then we have it in the three books that we were just discussing, the book of Ruth, the book of Esther, and the book of Judith. We had women who were concerned about the identity. They helped to maintain the identity of the Jewish people. Is that correct? Did I understand it correctly? Because it was in all three stories, there was a sort of identity with Ruth, that she decided to take on the identity or the tribe of her mother-in-law. Esther was fighting for the survival of the Jewish people, and now Judith also, isn't it?
But she was given lineage. Remember the genealogy of David. So yes. All of that, you know, I think Debbie was very good pointing out how when you get a woman's name there, find out where she belongs to and why she's there. And so the book of Ruth is there because of that lineage.
Yes.
And, you know, she can't be avoided, right, because she's part of the family that leads to. And I think the same sort of thing goes on. Well, we know that Esther and Judith are both stories that are there to teach fidelity, faithful, how to live in diaspora and dispersion among the other peoples. And that's why Esther is such a good example. I don't think too many Jewish women became queens in the Persian Empire, but nevertheless, she's an example of hope and courage and trust. And I think we could say that Judith also is on a similar sort of a line.
And Judith
is such an interesting figure as a widow.
Yes.
And
so all three women had hope and trust and faith and courage.
Oh, yes.
And we had two
maybe
widows.
Wonderful feminine attributes.
And we had two widows.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And, of course, the interesting thing is that Judith is such a different widow because she's got wealth, she's got power, she's got respect. She's not weak woman, right?
But
weak
when
woman
you,
is strong God.
When you say that the book of Esther and the book of Judith is teaching something, it might be also important to say that in both of them, the two women are considered as extremely beautiful. And so through the beauty, they could get to where they were and had the chance to do what they did.
Yes, that's why I love that combination. The beauty that allured Holofernes, the wit that actually completely and utterly, you know.
So this is our last part of our series on the women in the Bible. So what do we take from the book of Judith as our last part, Brother Karen?
Well, it's a victory story, and of all the books we've looked at, it's the last one to be written. I think that's important. We've found these wonderful threads that do kind of link up, even though Judith has got its own distinctive identity and story. But it's a victory that witnesses not only to her effective preparation, because she certainly does prepare for it. I mean, there's a lot of mascara that goes on and she dresses up beautifully, but her prayer is effective. Her beauty beguiles Holofernes. The strength of her hand wielded in the power of God doesn't fail her at the crucial moment when she cuts off Holofernes' head. And her proclamation of victory to the besieged city of Bethulia announces the true source of power. What she says, once more, God has made manifest strength in Israel and power against our enemies. The final verse of the book suggests the continued power of Judith as a sign of God's power and a reminder to trust in God. I think that's actually been a good theme virtually right through.
Yes.
All the books that we've looked at. So, yes, the theme is that victory belongs to God. The Exodus, Israel's first experience of that, enslaved and totally defenseless, they're delivered by the power of God in the face of all Egypt's power. The conquest of the land, God's power. Victory over Jericho, again, a woman featured in that too. So, yes, the taking of Jericho won not by weapons, but by a liturgical procession. We saw these. Gideon's army was reduced from 32,000 to 300. Victory belongs with God. Nobody can say my own power brought me victory. Some trust in chariots, some in horses, some, but we trust in the word of and the power of God. David sent out with a slingshot. So yes, it's the power of God that really comes through in the book of Judith. And it's come through in all of the stories that we've reflected on. But the beauty of it is, who are those who have been most open to the power of God?
Yes, you who know, are they?
The trust in power, trust in might. That seems to be sound so much like the male privilege, patriarchy. And yet these stories, the stories of the women, have come through so powerfully.
And when we remember in our first session when we talked about Genesis, and then we talked about Exodus, it was you said without the women there would not have been Moses, and without the women in the book of Esther there would not be a Jewish people. Without, you know, they were saving the people from the beginning, and it was often despite of male instructions. You said with the two midwives, you said they were had instructions to kill all the baby boys. And it was thanks to these women that not every baby boy was killed.
Well, interesting. God is the source of life. God remembered. We heard that often enough. And then, of course, the women who are the bearers of the children are also life givers. And I'm afraid, unfortunately, in too many stories, men have been the life takers.
Yes, that's quite sad, but...
Yes. But again, I think, you know, really, it's a violent book. There's violence in this book when you look at it. It's not only men that commit violence, isn't it interesting? Did you know that in some packs of cards, the Queen of Hearts is shown with a sword?
Yes.
And that's modelled on Judith?
Ah, okay.
yes. And in the Middle Ages, of course, there were hundreds of plays based on the book of Judith. It was very popular in those days. Unhistorical book, it's got a lot of interest, a lot of history.
Yes.
Behind it.
Thank you so much, Brother Kieran, for this interview, and thank you for this series that you've done with us. And we're looking forward to our next session, but the last session of the series will be about the book of Judith. And now we know she's a courageous woman who trusts in God and who frees her people of the enemy. She makes the enemy headless. thank you very much,
That's
Brother Kieran.
That's right. Good. I like that line.
Okay, so next Monday, 7 to 8:30 on Zoom. Please get in touch with us at www.studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha, keep safe. Thank you, Brother Kieran.
Atero peace is calling in the bonds of love. For the world a new day dawns.